Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. We're in June, nearing the halfway mark of the year, in case you guys don't know how to read calendars. Teachers almost out of school. Kids almost out of school. All hell's going to break loose this summer. You never know what's going to happen. But we do know what's going to happen. Lots of wrestling news. And there were a couple topics on my mind this week. That's why I'm dropping an additional show with my pal, Jesse Collings of Wrestling Inc., and then also of Voices of Wrestling, hosts a podcast. He's been on this show before. Three subjects top my mind. One was Cody Rhodes' performance in Hell in a Cell on Sunday that had the wrestling world buzzing because of his torn pec. Should he have worked it? Shouldn't he have worked it? Two was the completely botched AEW announcement from Friday night regarding the world title picture. Had a lot of thoughts on that. I unpacked some things with Jesse on the show regarding that. And also I wanted to talk, primarily the reason I want to have a podcast this week is I want to kind of take a look back at the world title reign of Hangman Page in AEW. Did it work? What could have been better? Was it perfect? Was it not perfect? Jesse and I break that all that down as well. So three main topics this week: Cody Rhodes and his torn pec, AEW botched announcement, and then the AEW world title reign of Hangman Page. Jesse and I talked for about an hour about all this stuff, so let's get right to it. And I should note, we recorded this on Monday, and so this is before any of the Cody promo that happened on Raw last night. So just kind of keep that in mind as we talk about that, which I actually mentioned. So I'm just mentioning it again. So let's get right to it. Myself, Jesse Collings, talking about Cody, Hangman, and AEW. Enjoy. Well, join me this week with a lot of things to talk about, a lot of things going on in my head. So that's why I want to have this fine gentleman on. He is a columnist for Voices of Wrestling and also Wrestling Inc. He's the co-host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. He is now all over the place in doing podcast appearances. So like the likes of WrestleNomics, so much so that he was joking he has to do a spreadsheet to figure out who uses what recording device and all the good stuff. And he is the only man in pro wrestling right now who was not injured. It's Jesse Collings. He's back. Jesse, welcome back.
I actually just tore my ACL.
Oh, no.
No, I'm joking. I am not injured, but thank you so much for having me back on, Josh. Yeah, I was just joking. It's not necessarily the number of podcasts you do, but the variety and different services that seems like everyone has. And everyone has their own preference, or everyone has their own way to record that. I was joking, like I was just sitting there. I was like, all right, when's Josh going to send me this link? And then you sent me, you're like, hey, are you on Skype? And I'm like, oh yeah, Josh uses Skype.
Right.
But I'm happy to be on to obviously a huge, just the last week feels like in wrestling news, it's been like, if you go back to like start of last weekend in the MJF story, feels like 1 million different things have happened between now and last Saturday.
Certainly has. Yeah. So the three main things we want to talk about this week, and actually nothing really to do with MJF, surprisingly enough. That seems to be
thankfully. What
a lot. Yeah. Thankfully. So I want to start, I wasn't going to start with this, but I'll start with it because it just happened last night as we're recording this on Monday, the Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell match, which was arguably probably the most buzzworthy, match of the weekend, and arguably, in this whole month. I mean, we're going to remember this for, obviously Double or Nothing was Memorial Day weekend and all that, but we've already kicked off into June and we have a lot of questions. So in the past couple of days, it was revealed that Cody Rhodes had suffered a torn pec, and was he going to wrestle last night? I think there was kind of no doubt he was going to go there and do something in the main event. Obviously WWE pretty light when it comes to big talent. And especially you're headlining a premium live event, as they're called now. And granted that they don't seem to care about these as much, given the deal with Peacock and everything like that. But it wasn't a major pay-per-view. But still, they had almost a sold-out house last night, if not fully sold out. And fans that wanted to see a good show. And this was Cody pushed through. And really kind of the big question was, I think you and I both watched the match this morning. And yeah, I always kind of struggle with this, should he have wrestled thing? And I think this is so much different than like quote unquote real sports, in that there's certain protocols, there's massive contracts online, there's so many different elements involved. Do you think he should have wrestled last night?
So I haven't looked into it as closely, but I've seen a lot of discussion from people online, and I don't know the medical backgrounds that everyone has said when they're making these opinions, but I've been told that given the nature of his injury, that he wasn't necessarily at risk for further injury by wrestling, in the sense that he couldn't make his current injury any worse. It was more of just the pain tolerance thing, and he clearly has a high threshold for pain tolerance. The argument against that would be, well, even if he can't hurt his pec anymore, he could have hurt himself compensating for it, which often happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like ultimately it's to me, it's more like I need to know if how pressured he was to perform. And given what we know about Cody, I would hesitate to say that he didn't want to wrestle and he was pressured into doing it by Vince McMahon or by someone in WWE because he was in the very significant match. It seems like ultimately he made the decision to do it. And it's not like he had a concussion or a brain-related injury where you could question his ability to put his health first or mentally be able to put his health first. It feels like ultimately it's his call, and I tend to decide on more with the talent. Like if Cody wanted to wrestle more, that's his call. Do you remember, this was not like a major story, but during the NBA All-Star game this year, Chris Paul had an injury. Like he had a lower body injury, like a knee injury, mm-hmm. and he needed to have some surgery on it. I think he maybe tore his meniscus or something like that. And he was going to miss like 4 or 5 weeks after the All-Star break. And he played during the All-Star game. He only played a few minutes, but he went out there and played during it. And people were talking about, oh, why did he play in this meaningless exhibition game when he needs to have surgery on his leg? That's crazy. But the nature of his injury was that he really wasn't going to make it any worse by going out and playing on this injured knee. So he might as well just go out and do it for a few minutes and, you know, entertain the fans in the All-Star game. And he wanted to play in the All-Star game. And then he went out and he had the surgery, and he was, you know, came back, and it didn't really affect his what time he would miss as an athlete. So you do see this sometimes in sports, but I didn't really have a problem with him wrestling. What did you think about it?
I kind of fall in the, when it comes to letting wrestlers kind of do what they want to do, I kind of fall more in that camp rather than being like that worried about their safety. Cause you know, again, this is not a case of, it's such a unique business, and people that have been in this from, you know, from the day, first day they started, they know there's a major risk of injury. It's just kind of part of it. You can be a quote unquote safe worker as you want, but you can get screwed up and screw up on really basic things. You can blow your back out on a body slam. You can, taking a simple bump, you can off a punch, you can slip something out. I mean, that's these things kind of
hash tore his quad, you know, getting into the ring.
Vince McMahon tore both quads getting into the ring, right? I mean, this performers, non-performers, whatever you want to call them. Yeah, things just happen. And just like to any of us, you know, you wake up one morning, you look over at your phone too quick, your alarm clock, and all of a sudden, you know, you twist something in your neck. It's like, how'd that happen? It's just, that's kind of part of these things happen. He got his weightlifting, and yeah, I mean, I had no doubt he was going to go back out. He was going to go out there and try to do the best he could. And I think it's this, you mentioned kind of the Chris Paul thing before. It's always this kind of vague area of, can you make it any worse? And you have to have doctors that you trust. And it's something you're not going to know till, you know, years down the road. And you might never know at all if that actually was the case, not the case. But yeah, I didn't have a big issue with it in watching the match this morning, kind of knowing what happened and everything. Because like I was watching the Celtics and Warriors game 2 last night, I thought it was a good match. I thought it really the second half of it, as things really kind of kicked into gear. I thought it was very fun, compelling wise. I again kind of knew the result going into watching it this morning, obviously, so that element was taken out. But I thought Cody did a great job. I thought the intensity was good. He's their top babyface by far. I mean, it is he he's just so good at it. He's just so good at getting people to like him. And granted, you know, we saw what happened at the end of the AEW run. But in terms of what he's doing right now, I mean, when he threw the bull rope over to Rollins and was just kind of like, come on, just go, like, damn it, let's go. I mean, it's just, those are things like you don't, WWE has been so like void of that, really, like, I want to get behind this guy for so long, and he's so good at it, and now they lose him for probably 6 or 7 months. It's unfortunate, and, you know, obviously you can talk about kind of the thinning main event talent that kind of gets hurt by this, but maybe long run it helps if they can build a good Rumble to WrestleMania run next year where it sees him maybe knock off Reigns, assuming Reigns is still a champion at that point. But it's, you know, I had no doubt he was going to do it. He put out a gutty performance. Rollins did his part as well. And they had what they've wanted for a while, is a buzzworthy, really buzzworthy main event, and one that didn't leave people lacking. I thought, you've heard basically universal praise for it, and you know that's great for WWE, but really you chalk it up to Cody Rhodes and obviously Seth Rollins to a lesser extent. But Cody Rhodes said, screw it, I'm going to go out there and let's do this, and he's going to get surgery, it looks like, this Thursday, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, going back to the injury, I think in this instance, because the injury was so visually obvious, he obviously, you know, he had the discoloration, you know, all over his chest and arm. It was really obvious that he was injured. But there have been plenty of times where wrestlers have been very injured and you didn't necessarily see it, you know, as visually as possible, but were every bit as dangerous, if not even more dangerous, as far as the extent of their injury than what Cody did. I mean, Kenny Omega, you know, for his last few months of his title reign had a bunch of injuries, and when he lost the title, he's been getting surgeries and recovering, and he's been out for months. So obviously he was someone who was probably wrestling with various injuries but because, you know, he didn't have a giant miscoloration on his chest, people weren't necessarily as concerned about it, because it wasn't as obvious, even though, you know, Dave had been reporting for a while that he was really banged up and he was really hurting. I think the thing about the match that stood out to me is that, so Cody is going into this Hell in a Cell match, and Cody coming off of his AEW run in what I think is a big advantage AEW has over WWE is that AEW's product is permitted to be much more violent than WWE's. Mm-hmm. And WWE has these matches like Hell in a Cell, which are supposed to be these especially brutal and violent matches, but how especially and brutal can they be when you're not allowed to blade and there's a limited amount of spots you can do with, you know, different hardcore elements, as opposed to AEW, which has, you know, tons of blood and thumbtacks and Cody's crashing through flaming tables and things that WWE doesn't really do.
Yep.
But because of his injury, it made this match feel very brutal and very violent in a way that I think Hell in a Cell, which, you know, the legacy of Hell in a Cell, which is, you know, when I was growing up and during the Attitude Era and, you know, even well into, you know, the 2000s when I became a fan, like, it was always this very brutal match with a lot of blood. One of my favorite matches growing up was the Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar Hell in a Cell match from, I want to say it was from Unforgiven, but that was like an incredibly bloody match. It was just, you know, Hell in a Cell has a certain standard of brutality to it, mm-hmm. that I think is missing because the product has changed and because they just kind of do the same old tired spots in all of these matches. But because of Cody's injury, it added so much more to the psychological aspects of the match. Like Seth Rollins hitting Cody with a Singapore cane, like, okay, that happens on like every single WWE pay-per-view. Someone gets hit with a Singapore cane. It's not particularly, you know, violent for Hell in a Cell, but because Cody's got the injury, suddenly it becomes this way more violent act, and you can hear the crowd really react to it. Like, oh, he hit him in, you know, the spot of his body where he's really hurt, or he hit him with the steel steps right in the shoulder, and all of those kind of things that I think helped make the match really stand out compared to pretty much every other match that WWE has produced lately. I actually like the women's triple threat match better than the main event. It was more of my style of match that I would prefer, but from the, you know, those two matches would be, I think, two of the better WWE matches of the year.
Yeah, it seems to be the consensus is that I haven't seen that match yet, but the consensus seems to be from that to the Judgment Day trios match to that basically in general, that for a show that didn't have a lot of expectations going into it, that people got a lot out of it. And that's always positive, right? When people are happy after watching a show, that's good. Entertained, yeah. You know?
I mean, it comes with the main event. I think with WWE, sometimes WWE is like pro wrestling gorilla in the sense that there maybe isn't a bunch of storylines setting up all of these matches or a bunch of compelling programs setting up all these matches, but the baseline of talent that they do have, especially when it comes to in-ring work, is pretty high. So even if you're not particularly excited for like a hot storyline, or you think that they might have fumbled away someone's character, if these people just go out there and they wrestle, it's usually at a pretty high level. I think like Seth Rollins is like the poster boy for that, where yeah. You might not like his character, but as soon as that bell rings, he's an excellent performer.
So we'll see what happens on the Monday Raw, where he's expected to do a promo, and we'll kind of explain, you know, writes him off or what have you. This show will actually go up on Tuesday, so we don't have the benefit of seeing what happened. But yeah, be interesting to see how they go forward, and obviously they're, you know, see what the rest of that next half year brings. Roman Reigns off doing his thing, and yeah, with Brock absent, and they need to elevate some talent.
Well, I think Randy Orton is injured, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe. I don't know if it's that storyline, real life. The lines are blurred there. I'm not really sure, but yeah,
he hasn't been around. Which
yeah,
and you think of that, you look at that Raw side, and you say, man, who is the top babyface on this brand? I guess it would probably be Bobby Lashley.
Yep.
And then you have AJ Styles and maybe Finn Balor underneath him. But again, you know, if Roman Reigns isn't around, do you need a top babyface? Because who? It's not like you have this dominant heel that is feuding with people. You kind of have just a bunch of people, and you don't necessarily need to have the hot baby face now. You need it for when Reigns comes back. So in some bizarre way, the lack of star power almost helps them in that regard.
Mm. Who knows? Maybe they flip Rollins, you know, maybe they just say, we're going to build something now that they know that, assuming, you know, Cody's going to be out for half a year at least, maybe they're like, well, we're going to build something for Rollins for one of the big, you know, maybe SummerSlam or something like that. You know?
I think you'd have to.
Yeah.
You look at, you know, Rollins is a heat on the Raw side at least. And again, the feel like the rosters have been a little bit more blurred and mixed the last few months. But, you know, Edge is a heel and he would be one of your top guys. And Kevin Owens is a heel and he would probably be one of your top guys too. And Seth Rollins is probably the top guy on the brand. Him and Cody really were the top act. And now Rollins is a heel, so you might need to have him go back babyface, and it might be time for him to go back to be babyface.
Yeah, maybe the third loss to Rhodes is the impetus to make that happen. You know what I mean? Maybe, you know. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, it should be interesting as always. See what they do the second half of the year. Let's. This is one of the things I really want to talk about. The first thing I want to talk to you about when I thought about this last week, I want to talk about the AEW title reign of Hangman Page. We'll save that for last. Because on Friday, Jesse, this announcement, did you, I knew you were on vacation, you were or out of town rather. Did you get to see the AEW Rampage live, the show Friday?
I didn't see the episode of Rampage, no.
Okay. So.
But I've seen the clips and stuff.
All right. So this was, I don't understand how badly this got screwed up. So let's just kind of go through this quick timeline real quick. So. Earlier on the day, we have this, we have this announcement that CM Punk is going to do a appearance on the show and talk about the future of the AEW World Title, his immediate future, something along those lines. So then it's kind of like, okay, this is kind of odd when the time of day it was announced, and it's like something seems to be up. So he does a promo in the second half of the show. I think it's like around 10:30 or so, maybe it's 10:04, something around that time, and he alluded to, you know, does this promo and basically is, you know, tear. You could tell something's up, and basically he talked about being injured. He never said what the injury was. He said he was going to require surgery, never said when that was happening, how long he was going to be out. So it's kind of this talking about something and not directly explain what you're talking about for whatever reason, which is odd in its own right, but whatever, it's wrestling. We get it. And so he mentions, you know, he would talk about essentially relinquishing the title, but that Tony Khan to not hold anyone up. And however, Tony Khan was like, no, you're the champion. Well, this is a bump in the road. So, and that was basically it. So the promo ends and I was kind of like, all right, what's up then? So it sounds like he's going to be out. We have no idea how long he's going to be out, when he's getting surgery, what happened. We just assume, based on anyone that saw one Wednesday show, was that he either got hurt on that ill-advised stage dive into the crowd, or he got hurt during the match, possibly during when he jumped over the ropes, did the springboard in and kind of botched it. Because after the match, you could see he was favoring his foot. I thought he was just his kick pad. Something was wrong with that, but something obviously is up with his left foot or knee or something. And then, so going right into that break, all of a sudden Jericho, literally right as we're going into break, Chris Jericho commentary says that Punk relinquished the title.
I'm champion for a reason. And I'm going to show you exactly why. I will come back bigger, faster, stronger, and hungrier than ever before. And God damn it, I will prove exactly why I am the best in the world.
Wow, what an announcement from CM Punk.
Wow.
I mean, that's blockbuster news there, guys. It's unfortunate. He's got a messed up wheel.
Only days after he won the title, he must relinquish it.
So then, of course, during that 3 minutes, Twitter's kind of figuring out what the hell happened. Did he relinquish it? Did he not? Brian Alvarez actually texted somebody, messaged somebody, and kind of said, no, they did not relinquish the title. So we're kind of going like, all right, what's happening then? The next break after, the next segment, Jericho again was kind of like, yo, we got to talk about what we just saw and that CM Punk relinquished the title. So it's like, okay, he said it again in the segment after the breaks.
Tonight, he puts that on the line against one of the hottest young prospects in AEW, Dante Martin.
We're talking about the TNT Championship. Let's talk about the AEW Heavyweight Championship and the big announcement that we just heard only minutes ago that CM Punk has had to relinquish the AEW World Championship. What's going to happen now? We don't know, but I'll tell you what's going to happen with the TNT Championship, and it's going to be a great main event on Rampage tonight.
So our usual wrestling logic is because you have the top guy on the headset is that he's relinquished the title. He probably just did not say that right during the promo. Okay, well, what does that mean? And then during the main event, which is the TNT title match between Scorpio Sky and Dante Martin, we get a full-speed Excalibur trying to explain what happened and what was happening, which included.
And Chris, to your earlier discussion, I have a massive announcement just now from Tony Khan. This coming Wednesday on Dynamite, there will be a battle royal to kick off the show. And look what Stan Lambert, but the battle royal. And then in the main event,
number one contender.
Yes, the number one contender, John Moxley, will take on the winner of the battle royal at Dynamite. And the winner will go on to Forbidden Door to compete for the interim AEW World Championship. CM Punk has not relinquished the title. We will have an interim champion. They'll be crowned from Forbidden Door by the TKO by Dante Martin.
Got a new TNT champion. Got it. Dante did it.
Oh!
We know we had to talk about the announcement, Excalibur, but this action has been absolutely incredible here at this main event of Rampage tonight. Dante Martin, at 21 years old, like you guys said, could become the youngest TNT champion in AEW history.
But that was massive news. You just dropped Excalibur at the hands. Well, from Tony Khan, massive news about this Wednesday on Dynamite. Yeah, as if there was any question, Dynamite, you can't miss it this Wednesday. But right now, Dante can't miss it.
Not relinquishing the title. A battle royal at the start of Dynamite. The winner will get Moxley at the end of Dynamite and then move on to the Forbidden Door. At Forbidden Door, there will be an interim title match against someone. He then alluded to a title unification match down the road. And this is all happening as he's trying to call the action inside the ring. And it's like, it's like a fever dream. Like, I have no idea what is going on. I had to rewind it three times to try to figure out what he was saying. And then the next day, a press release comes out that it was going to be Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Hiroki Goto. And the winner of that New Japan show, I believe Dominion, would then move on to the Forbidden Door to get a shot against the winner of this Moxley versus the winner of this battle royal on Wednesday.
So you watch Jericho, he's putting the pressure on the champ.
He is. Just to reiterate, the battle royal kicking off Dynamite, winner faces Moxley.
In the main event, the number one ranked Moxley, and then whoever wins that match goes on to Forbidden Door to compete for the interim AEW World Championship. That means we will have a unification AEW World Championship match with the interim champion and CM Punk somewhere down the road.
Wow.
They said Moxley was the number one contender. If you looked at the contendership page that night, he was not the number one contender because Wardlow was the number one contender. They then changed that after the show, and then Moxley became number one, Wardlow number two, and Hangman Page, who just lost the title, became number three ranked in the division. And I lean on this tweet. This kind of explains it from Trevor Dame. He said, I'm in AEW, but Excalibur barely being able to get through an explanation for the status of the world title, all caps, trying to announce multiple matches for Wednesday while pausing to call spots in the main event kind of sums up a lot of things. Jesse, I'll hand it over to you. Your thoughts on what we heard Friday and everything that came out of it.
Yeah, so I think the various moving parts. So the first thing that I think is relevant is that this was a... So CM Punk hurts himself somehow on Wednesday. And then this was a week where they had a live Rampage, which is pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you know, an important show. It's their second show in Southern California. It's a sold out crowd in Ontario, California, probably maybe the biggest crowd they're going to get for Rampage all year. We'll see about that, but it was supposed to be a really big, important show. But it's still Rampage, and it only has an hour. So my guess is that they didn't want to spend a lot of time in that 1 hour with a promo segment and then explanation and all that stuff. And I feel like the pacing of the show got screwed up. And so they basically had to, and maybe Punk didn't execute his, you know, didn't make it clear enough in his promo what exactly was going to happen. Maybe he didn't understand exactly what was going to happen. But it seems like everything moved very, very quickly in that they were kind of having to book and adjust on the fly over a short, very, very short period of time. And what ends up, and I think that ended up happening with the complete massive confusion. Because if you, you know, as you hear what you just described, all of the things that just happened, It's very clumsy and very unprepared, and the company is usually better than that.
Yeah, that was my thing. Is like, this is your, so I used to work, people listen to this know, I used to work in pro sports. I worked for six, seven years in pro sports and on the, in back office, but also in dealing in game entertainment. And part of that is announcements, reads, you know, the presentation, kind of what you're trying to tell fans. I was also involved in the marketing as well. And one of the things is you're trying to figure out what is the message we're trying to convey, right? And we used to do pregame meetings every game, regardless if it was a Wednesday night with 1,500 fans in the building or a Saturday night with 99-16, was we were like, okay, here's what we have to do. And we would go over it sometimes in one-on-ones after and be like, here's exactly what needs to be said and so on and so forth. It felt like, Jericho later said he misspoke. It didn't feel like there was a tribunal, so to speak, between Tony Khan, the announcers, and Punk, perhaps, in terms of here's what the message is to get out there. It's almost like they kind of try to figure out during a commercial break. But this is like, I don't know, this is like your world title. And to me, like, the big thing is who knew what. And was Punk supposed to say something that he did not say? And to me, like, the timing thing, I understand what you're saying there. However, I would say there was a useless match relatively a few minutes prior. It was a squash match with Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks, which was basically like a three-minute squash match. And to me, that's your time built in right there. It wasn't a match advertised ahead of time. It was just kind of like there. I think you could have done if he's just, I'm not linked to title, you could have said, that's when you kind of come in, you can do a very like relaxed, here's the situation that's happening. You use a Tony Schiavone, you use You use an Excalibur, use Alex Marvez, whoever you want to use to explain here's what's happening, so it does not come off as manic as it did. I don't understand how in the second break Jericho still said he relinquished the title, and he said it so distinctly. Why isn't Tony Khan between saying he did not, don't say anymore, we're gonna give you something else to read? It seemed to be so chaotic and not a good pro wrestling chaotic kind of way, where things are like, holy shit, all this stuff is happening, right? This just seems to be like, I have no idea what is happening. No one online seemed to understand what was happening. And to me, like, this is your world title. So unless something happened between the minute Punk went out and the minute he came back, and they were like, holy shit, we didn't expect this, I think it's unexcusable. I know this is wrestling and all this stuff, but this is a guy in Tony Khan who is supposed to have learned from all the mistakes of the past. It's what we've heard so much. And he's done, I mean, I give him credit. I thoroughly enjoy AEW every week. I think it's revived this interest in wrestling in me, that WWE had kind of done a good job of kind of dulling over the past 20 years. But I mean, it's like, dude, either he is doing too many jobs, which I believe he is with all these other things he has going on, or I don't know, something that's so royally screwed up here. I'm still like this 3 days later, almost 3 days later. Yeah. I'm like in still like surprised at how badly this was botched of a rollout announcement.
Yeah, I think long term, as we kind of see this, now that we have, you know, the press release and we have the kind of dates for what's going to happen, and we know when we're going to get this interim AEW champion, I think ultimately it will work out fine when we see it happening week to week, as opposed to in the moment when we were all just like, what happened? I wasn't watching live. I was kind of following on social media because I was out of town. So I was even more confused than I think anyone who was watching at home. I think this is a general kind of an AEW issue, is that the company really doesn't like to spend any time on its broadcasts explaining things. And I think a lot of the time those complaints are made inaccurately. Like, I don't need to have my handheld like WWE does with it, hitting you over the head with explanation after explanation for anything any of the individual performers are doing. But they don't do a really good job like promoting future things and making information very clear, right? It's kind of become a meme amongst hardcore fans that Excalibur runs down a card for next week's show in like 0.5 seconds, right, taking one deep breath and just rambling off like 20 matches. You know, you could probably stand to take a little bit more time with those kind of things. They don't like to do, you know, recap videos of stuff that happened earlier. They don't like to show you things that happened on AEW Dark that might be relevant. They don't show you things like Wheeler Utah and Best of the Super Juniors, right?
Right.
There's really no time taken to explain anything to the viewers. And I think that they, in Tony's mind, they were explaining it on Rampage, but I think in general there's a reluctance to take the time to make sure that your viewers know exactly what is going to happen, that sometimes does not work out well for the company and could probably be room for improvement. But I get the sense that there's a really big concern about people will tune out when that happens, or we got to try to jam as much into this show as possible. So we're not going to have time for explanations and reflection. It's go, 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 go. And that's not always the best way to communicate to your audience.
Yeah. I think that whole thing went down Friday. I'm just thinking this now. I think it made sense to the guy that we saw at the Double or Nothing scrum afterwards. The, I would say maniacal, but he, did you watch any of that scrum afterwards from Double?
Yeah, I watched most of it.
He was all over the place. And I know he's a little bit kind of manic at times, and he gets very excited, very enthusiastic. I think he drinks way too much coffee. And this is someone I love coffee. Because he always has a coffee cup in his hand, always drinking coffee. He's talked about this before. I think he just needs to back off just a little bit. He was just like these long answers that went here or here. It's almost like a Dave Meltzer answer, right? It goes here to here to here to here to here. And eventually you kind of end up back around the original point. I think this all made sense to that guy. I, 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 Someday I you know, when the wound is not fresh or how kind of bizarre this was, maybe it'd be good to ask him, like, what happened? Like, was this your intent or did someone not get the message? Or I'm always kind of fascinated with all that stuff, but it was, you know, it's onward and upward from here. It's not going to affect, you know, pay-per-view buy rates or anything like that, but it's just kind of one of these things of like, just you take a breath. And I'm glad you brought the, you know, they don't take a lot of time on Dynamite to talk about, to take a pause and look at certain things. I think it's kind of an issue with when, especially you mentioned Dark and Dark Elevation. So they do the, you know, the scrollers at the bottom of the match results, which really don't mean anything. So they don't allude to it. They barely even talk about that the show exists, but they will use Dark and Dark Elevation to build up win streaks for contenders, future contenders, specifically like for the TNT title. That's how Frankie Kazarian got his TNT title shot. He'd won like, I don't know, 15 matches in a row. I mean, Scorpio Sky, speaking of TNT champion, they talked about Scorpio Sky and he had had, you know, an undefeated streak of like the last year,
400 days.
Yeah. The vast majority of that was in AEW Dark and Dark Elevation, which they never alluded to at all. They've never thrown anything like, you know, Scorpio Sky puts his, you know, a 22 match win streak on the line next week on Dark, you know, things like that. They never,
that would take 10 seconds.
Right. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, this person's getting a contender, a title shot. Like, why? And they're like, and they'd never explain this, but it's like, because they have a super long win streak. You got to look at the rankings. Nobody looks at the rankings. No one really cares about the rankings. They do this with the tag team titles as well. They build up guys in Dark and Dark Elevation. They don't mention it on Dynamite or Rampage. And all of a sudden, oh, this person's getting a title shot. Why? We barely seen them at all the past 6 months. There's just the kind of those synergies that they miss. And I think you're right. They just want to fit in so much to the show, but because they have this huge roster and all these people are trying to fit in, but they don't just take a pause and be like, okay, we're going down the road here. We should kind of see things and say, hey, by the way, this person's got a great win streak. Throw it in like a line on commentary every now and again, like, oh, so-and-so is doing this on Dark. Yeah, check it. You know, anything like that, I think would be helpful to help fans kind of follow along and better understand, like, oh yeah, I remember he mentioned that 2 months ago that they had this great win streak. So it's not like, what's this person talking about? A 400-day win streak? Where? Not on this show.
Yeah, I think in general, I like the idea that someone can get a lot of wins on Dark, and that is relevant to the main, you know, I don't call it the main roster, but the main shows, right? If someone is getting, if you've watched Dark and you notice, oh, that person is winning all of their matches, they're probably going to get some form of television angle soon. I like that idea of it, but I think you definitely could take, again, 10 seconds, 15 seconds to show, Anthony Nese picked up his 10th win in a row, and you show him like power bombing someone on Dark, and it, you know, just plants that seed in the head. It's like, all right, that guy's, you know, going on a win streak. You know, we might see him soon, or he's going to be, you know, if he's going to be wrestling, you know, a big star on an episode of Rampage. It's like, okay, this match is a little bit more relevant because I see that this person who doesn't win on Dynamite or Rampage at least seems to be having some sort of lower level success. Right. I just think, you know, with Tony, I think sometimes and I think anyone that is, doing creative writing in any way can relate to this. He comes up with an explanation in his head that's clear to him and makes sense. But is that always executed on television for your audience? And I think maybe in his head, this whole CM Punk explanation thing made sense. But then the execution of it was so botched that there had to be all of these other things that some of which, like Jericho's commentary, just confused people even more. And so I think that is, I think something that in general you'll have to work on. And it probably comes with experience. I think Tony's done a really good job all told when it comes to the creative product that he's presenting. But he's also, you know, only been doing it for a few years. And I think there's more stuff he'll be able to learn from and to grow from moving forward.
So let's talk about one of Tony Khan's creative ideas, that being the world title run of Hangman Page. And now that it is It's a wrap, at least the first one anyway. I'm sure, but you know, things are all said and done. It'll probably hold that belt once or two more times, depending, you know, how the future goes. So Hangman Page, so his title run ran 197 days. This was from November's Full Gear through May's Double or Nothing, and this was the, I believe it was the third or second longest run, I believe, for the AEW. There's five total champions, obviously. Punk's just run just began, but yeah, 197 days, so Full Gear through Double or Nothing. He was the fourth overall champion, third longest reign. I should have corrected that. Third longest reign. Seven title defenses in that span, just as many as Kenny Omega, who had the first longest reign. We'll kind of go through his Hangman's run here. Take a step back, why would you grade the Hangman Page AEW title run?
Oh, I don't know how you feel about this, so this will be interesting. I think it's like an A+.
A+, okay. Tell me what you got.
I just think that Hangman Page was my ideal babyface world champion in a way where I felt like he as a performer really grew as a bell-to-bell guy, for starters. I think his personality and his character really came into its own right. He had this long journey to win the world title. He had this storyline where essentially he lacked the kind of confidence and killer instinct to win the big one and to beat Kenny Omega. And he wins the title, and so he finally overcomes those issues of confidence and such. And then his personality changes where he becomes very confident, almost, you know, really too confident. And that's ultimately what cost him against CM Punk. But he ended up really growing, I feel like, as a personality, as a babyface champion. And I thought he was booked to be intelligent. He rarely had times where the heel got advantage of him. And if he did, it was a pure heat angle. Cause I was so tired of the dumb babyface champion, you know, tries to fight a bunch of heels and then gets beat up. Right. He had friends, which is another thing that I feel like babyface champions often don't have, is the heels team up and beat them up. And the babyface is left there getting beat up by three people and nobody runs out to save them. You know, he had coalitions, whether it was with Dark Order, which kind of got reduced over time, or Jurassic Express. He had friends. He was smart. I thought that I really liked his work in the CM Punk angle and build. I thought he showed a level of attitude and confidence and a good sense of arrogance that you would want your guy who has been champion for a few months to have. I go back and I think before he won the title, I felt like a consensus thought was that Hangman Page should have a short title reign and that he's better chasing the title than he will be as champion. But after a few defenses, you know, the Bryan Danielson match and the Adam Cole program and those kind of things, I thought it flipped and people were like, you know, he's been a great champion. I want to see him hold the title for a longer period of time. I probably, if I was the booker, I probably would have had him beat CM Punk at Double or Nothing. And I think you can look at the numbers of his title run, and there's a lot of noise there, right? There's a lot of other things that could be contributing to AEW's business growth during his time there. You know, CM Punk is with the company now, and MJF has been in hot programs, and you know, Bryan Danielson's been brought in and all of these things. But you look at the success that the pay-per-views he headlined have done year over year. You know, Full Gear was way up in 2021 than it was in 2020. It was up, I think, 71% from 2020. Did 85,000 buys in 2020. It did 145,000 buys in 2021. Revolution was up 17% from 2022 to 2021. And we don't have the final number on Double or Nothing, but it seems to indicate, and Tony Khan said as much, that Double or Nothing 2022 was bigger than Double or Nothing 2021. You know, for quarter one, AEW was up 29% in total viewers each week, or Dynamite was. They were up 28% in the key demo over quarter one between 2022 and 2021. So I just think top to bottom, I really liked his performances. I liked the way his character was presented. And there's really no argument that it wasn't successful from a business standpoint. So I can't, it's my, I can't think of like a better babyface championship reign in recent memory, at least in American wrestling, in quite a long time.
Gotcha. So I don't agree. And it's not the in-ring, because in-ring, I have no issues with Paige. I think I would say to me, I guess on a grade, I would say like a C plus, maybe B minus. It was, it just felt like an average title run to me. And a year from now, we could say, I could look at this and be like, huh, well, this seems, he's a lot stronger now because of all this stuff and building in some of the history and depending on kind of what they do over the next year. I think it's like, I think it's super important for him that he is, that there's a good plan for him in the next like 6 months. So I say that because AEW does not do world title rematches. They just don't do title rematches generally in general. They've had two, which was the Moxley and Omega match at Winter is Coming, right? Or sorry, the Exploding Barbed Wire Death Match was the rematch after Winter is Coming. And then the Paige and Danielson rematch for the title after the time limit draw. That's the only two world title rematches they have ever done in what, 3+ years?
Well, I think, didn't Paige wrestle Cole twice? Didn't he wrestle him?
Sorry. Yeah. So Cole, yeah. So now we're at three. So yeah. So yeah, the world, yeah, the yeah, at Revolution, then they had the Texas Death Match. And yeah, so they've done three. And typically, the guy that loses does not get a, just not get a rematch, or at least right away, right? So Chris Jericho lost the title, never wrestled for it again. Moxley, we talked about him. And then it was Omega who got injured and, or was injured. And you know, who knows, you know, if he comes back. My thought was before the Punk injuries that the end of Forbidden Door would end with Omega coming out after the main event, you know, Punk assuming that he would win. And would, you know, maybe set something up for All Out, perhaps. But I think that, who knows what's going to happen, obviously, with that. And, yeah, so we kind of looked through these matches. I think in kind of looking through the timeline here, and I remember saying this at the time, he wins, he defeats Omega at Full Gear on November 13th. He doesn't wrestle for another month. And that was the Danielson time limit draw at Winter is Coming, right? So when I think of like a champion that isn't a big star already yet in terms of the guys that came before him, the Jerichos, the Moxleys, and the Omegas, to me, you know, you're trying to get him in that space. It's hard because of all the history those guys have, but you're at least kind of get him in the conversation in terms of like finishes and character. And leading into this, I thought the build to this was A plus stuff. You know, I thought we all knew what was going to happen at Full Gear. We just knew it. But like Jim Ross has said, and so many people said, if the execution is there, it doesn't matter if you know it, because it still is satisfying because you were along for the ride the whole way. I wanted that those first few weeks to see him in action sooner, I guess. And it felt like it just took a long time to kind of get there. Then you had the Danielson time limit draw, and you and I had actually talked about that a while ago, I think. We talked about it during the year review series about the time limit draw and all that. And then they come right back, a month later, and then he wins. And then we go to what do we get for test? So again, so his title matches. So the two Danielson matches, then it was this, they pivot to the Lance Archer feud, which was kind of just random out of nowhere. That ends up with a one-off Texas Death Match. Then it goes to the Adam Cole series and that whole thing, which goes from Revolution through mid-April Rampage. It was a Dante Martin title defense in there. And then he lost to CM Punk, last Sunday, so, or two Sundays ago. So in between then, he'd had some, let's see, there was a couple, you know, Dark Order multi-man tag matches. And yeah, it was, there was something that was missing. And I don't know if it was because I liked Paige more as the chasey rather than the chased. I don't know if it was because, again, that first month when he just really wasn't a presence as much as I wanted the world champion to be. I don't know. It felt like it took a while to kind of get to, here's the next thing for him. And that was just me. I was hoping for something a little bit more in those first few weeks after. I don't, it's hard to kind of put my finger on it, but I just felt there was something missing there, and I don't know really what it is.
Yeah, I think that has been a common criticism for his title reign in general, which is that he wasn't always on television as much as one would think, and that there were other wrestlers who had a larger TV presence than him. And the idea is that he's the champion, so he should de facto be the most important person on the roster and should have the most TV time, and he should be wrestling frequently. I think your point is relevant about the sense that he doesn't have the outstanding star power that Kenny Omega, John Moxley, or Chris Jericho had. So he probably has to work harder to establish him as a star at that level, which I think they have in the macro sense, as far as giving him this, you know, these long storyline builds and having him beat certain people. But on a week to week level, you kind of got to be reminded that this is the top guy and this is our top guy. I think with AEW, it's such a competitive company from the sense of the quality and popularity of its top tier of performers is so high that it can be difficult for one person like a Hangman Page to kind of stand out as a singular top star. And I've seen that too, is that people, you know, the whole argument for CM Punk beating Hangman Page was that Punk is the biggest star in the company. And that's pretty much undoubtedly true. And it's always going to be hard for Page to become a bigger star than CM Punk because of CM Punk's, you know, is a star of a rare level, especially when you factor in the circumstances that have allowed him to become as popular as he has in AEW, which involved him not wrestling for almost a decade. So there's a lot of that that goes into it, and I think it can be difficult, I think, for any individual wrestler to kind of stand out in AEW's roster. And sometimes I think some people can feel like, well, Hangman Page is over, but he's not as over as I think he can be or I think he should be, given that, you know, there are these other top performers, whether it's, you know, the guys in Blackpool Combat Club or CM Punk or MJF. It's hard for those guys to stand out.
Mm. So what do you do with if you're the Booker man, what would you do with Hangman Page now?
Well, I think there's a lot of possibilities, especially now that CM Punk's not going to be the champion.
You have this
Forbidden Door show coming up, which I'm very excited about, and I think it's a great idea. But at the same time, it's going to be a lot of stuff that's probably going to be happening in a relative vacuum, right? The top matches, if they're going to be AEW versus New Japan matches, which seems like they're going to be, you kind of have to do something with him for Forbidden Door. Dave mentioned that Okada maybe, but then those plans maybe aren't exactly what's going to happen. I think that in some ways, I feel like you can beat him again. Like, whether that's at Forbidden Door or he loses a few to a top heel you want to add more juice to. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like unconventional thinking in the sense that he just lost to CM Punk. He needs to win something because he just lost. But I feel like the way his character works and the overall story that AEW has tended to tell is that he can lose, and then the loss was so devastating to CM Punk that he can afford to lose again another major match. And then you can start building it back up again. I think that you look at the long-term aspects of him. I would say that I'd want to get the title back on him late 2023.
Okay.
And that's pretty long-term, but I think that's the case. I don't know exactly what you can do with him. I mean, there's no shortage of people he could feud with. He could feud with John Moxley. I think he could feud with Chris Jericho again. I think there's a story to be told there, and I think Jericho is someone he could beat. I think he could feud with House of Black if he wanted to do that. I think he could, you know, Kenny Omega is coming back, and there's a potential story with that one again. He could feud with MJF. depending on whatever MJF status is or if he's going to be around or that kind of thing. I don't think there's a shortage of opponents for him to feud with and to have relevant programs. But I think you got to get through the Forbidden Door show before we kind of see his long-term plans.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When it comes...
Punk dropping the title opens up all sorts of other possibilities. He could wrestle Moxley. He could win the Battle Royal and wrestle Moxley. He could wrestle Tanahashi for the title. He could win the title again. He could be the interim champion in a few weeks' time.
Right. Yeah. What would you, leading into Wednesday, what do you, to me, it feels like they want to get to Moxley and Tanahashi, which is this match they've talked about for months and months and months and, New Japan shows and what have you. Do you think that is, do you think that's going to be the direction?
That they'll do Moxley and Tanahashi?
Yeah, at the pay-per-view, yeah, for the interim title that Moxley wins.
It's a really good question because Moxley seems like, Moxley's doing the Blood and Guts show. And he's kind of in that, but he's almost in a separate program. He doesn't seem like he's going to win the title because he seems like he's still wrapped up in this feud. Now, he could be the champion and be in that feud. And his Blood and Guts is going to be after Forbidden Door, right?
Yes.
I think so, right? When's that Detroit show?
Yeah, isn't that the week? It's a week after, right?
I remember being later. I'm like, yes, it's June 29th. Yeah, so you're right. It's right after that. So Moxley seems tied up right now. Of course, the original booking plan. We don't know what the original booking plan was for him at that was supposed to be CM Punk's spot. I think the plan is that, Hiroshi Tanahashi will be losing at Forbidden Door. He's not going to become the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. That would have never been the plan. So I think Moxley's a safe bet, right? He's a safe pair of hands in that regard. But there are other ways you could do it. I mean, it would be tempting to put the title on MJF, right?
That's the one that a lot of people are talking about, depending on what's going on. I think everyone kind of assumes it's just this, a whole work and all this stuff. But I mean, it'd be quick to come back with that. But that would be, because then you have the automatic, the reason I think the MJF thing kind of works, and this is almost kind of backing into it, is because, he made this mention during his promo about not caring about New Japan, right? And to me, I thought, okay, they're trying to write him off for like a month or so because he doesn't really make sense for that Forbidden Door pay-per-view. You know what I mean? It's not like when you think of like a AEW dream match for a New Japan wrestler for MJF, there's not, to me, that just doesn't really fit as it would like a Danielson, a Moxley, Punk, or, any of these top guys. Right. But to me, like if you had MJF come back, He wins. He somehow cheats to beat Moxley, and we've seen that match not a lot, but we've seen it before. But that could be fun. And he moves on and just trashes, trashing New Japan as only he probably could, and he kind of really built up something to that, and he ends up winning the interim title and has a this reign that we thought was going to happen at some point anyway. You build that to if Punk is ready by All Out. I mean, that would be a huge you revive that rivalry. There is a way to get there. So, yeah, to your point, it's kind of like, Moxley's storyline-wise is kind of tied up. So, yeah, there is a path there. There's a path for Paige to win it and to really kind of regain some steam there. So you could do that rematch down the road. So there are some interesting angles that they could take. It just seemed to be Moxley Tanahashi seems to be kind of the thing, but maybe not. I don't know.
Well, of course, could be Moxley versus Haruki Goto as well. For me, I think you also have to think about the political aspects of this, right? So New Japan has put forth Hiroshi Tanahashi to lose. I think it's safe to say that's probably the plan, is that Hiroshi Tanahashi is going to lose. He's a good person because he's over in a big, in a relevant star. And, most, I think, American fans that know anything about New Japan will at least recognize Hiroshi Tanahashi as a major star, but he's at the point of his career where he can lose and it's not that big of a deal. He's not like Okada or maybe Naito or someone who they wanted to protect a little bit more. But at the same time, New Japan might have a short list of AEW talent that they would approve to beat Hiroshi Tanahashi. They wouldn't want Hiroshi Tanahashi to lose to just anybody on the AEW roster. And does that change the calculus of how they want to put together that match? I think New Japan would have been fine with Tanahashi losing to CM Punk. I think they'd be fine with him losing to Jon Moxley, who's, you know, obviously a New Japan star himself. But would they be okay with MJF, who has no affiliation with New Japan and is not maybe someone that they view as a major star? Would they want him to beat Tanahashi? Would they want like someone like Wardlow to beat Tanahashi, if you wanted to go that route, or maybe a lesser profile star that you really wanted to push to the moon, given this opportunity? I think that's also a relevant aspect to it. The good thing about AEW is I feel like their roster has so many talented people on it that I feel like there's a lot of people that if you gave them the opportunity to be the champion and book them strong enough, I think they could do really well. And I can't say that necessarily about WWE. I think that WWE's done a number on their talent pool in that regard. But in AEW, I just feel like even someone like, I feel like if you gave like Isaiah, you know, if you gave Swerve Strickland the title, I feel like he could make it work if you protected him enough. And he's like probably like the 20th most important person on the roster.
Right.
And I think there's a chance here to do something really interesting or do something a little bit more safer, which would be like someone like a Jon Moxley.
So I think what I'm hearing you're saying is that Evil Uno is going to be your next interim AEW World Champion. Do I get that right?
I don't see why Hook can't be the AEW.
That's right. Yes. I wanted to. Yeah. So we're about halfway through the year here, and we talked about kind of predictions or kind of talking points and things like that. But let's. So how are you feeling about your? You know, you said like a year from now, if we were to talk, this is back in December. That Hook could be the biggest star in AEW. How are you feeling about that so far?
I said that Hook could be, my language was, it's not crazy or it's not impossible to think that Hook is the biggest star in pro wrestling.
That's what it was. Yes.
So I think his climb has been slower than originally anticipated. But I can't say anything negative about it. Really, I think that they're obviously going to take their time with him, and it's probably going to be years until he becomes a main event star if he ever gets to that level. But I would say that it's unlikely that he's going to become the biggest star in pro wrestling. I think back in December, there was the concept of true lightning in a bottle, true someone who is just bursts onto the scene and becomes so super popular and it becomes undeniable that they need to be pushed regardless of experience level. I think what we've seen now is that he's going to take time. He's still got a tremendous amount of upside, and I think they've handled it perfectly well. They haven't booked him to be stupid or dumb or anything like that. They haven't exposed his limitations at all. So I feel good from an overall standpoint, but I would be very surprised if he's the biggest star in pro wrestling.
Well, watch, he wins the Battle Royal on Wednesday. He moves on to face Tanahashi. Imagine that.
I mean, you say that like as in kind of like joking, but wouldn't that be a very compelling, at least him versus Hook versus Moxley? If Hook wins the Battle Royal and wrestles Moxley, I think that would be a very compelling thing. I think with the Battle Royal, if you're going to do Moxley anyway, if the plan is Moxley versus Tanahashi, I would have someone who people wouldn't expect win that Battle Royal, like a younger talent, because I think that can help really establish them. I think that's like if you have, you know, a Swerve Strickland,
right.
I think that would be cool. Like have him win the Battle Royal, have him have this, you know, significant match against Jon Moxley. I think there's a lot of people you could pick and say that would be a good moment for them. And I think that's important to give these younger up and coming talents key victories that people will remember and have them in some big spots.
Yeah, to your point, they have an opportunity to elevate someone and do something a little bit interesting. You already have an established star in the main event, going for the interim world title shot. Why not? Yeah, if I guess it depends on where. If they're like, yes, Moxley is going to advance no matter what in their heads, find a way to elevate somebody that could take a loss. And if they're dead set on having Moxley, yeah, find someone there that can actually benefit from it, come out of it even stronger. Could be interesting to see what they do. So yeah, we'll
some of the biggest stars in wrestling history became stars because someone got hurt in front of them and they needed to create a new star.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say that's an opportunity for someone in AEW. You could say that's an opportunity for somebody in WWE with Cody now, you know, getting injured. You know, you can look at Steve Austin getting, you know, his push because Bret Hart left the company, or and Shawn Michaels was injured, or you know, The Rock in a similar kind of boat, or Bruno Sammartino getting the WWF World or WWWF World Championship because Buddy Rogers apparently had a heart attack. Like, there's plenty of times in wrestling history where someone became a gigantic star because someone got injured.
Exactly. Well, we'll see what happens this week. Jesse, before I let you go, we're up on the hour. We'll have you run through, yeah, where people can find you on social media. Again, your columns, podcast, appearances all over the place, spreadsheets. The floor is yours.
Yeah, I would just – I always just tell people to follow me on Twitter, at Jesse Collings, J-E-S-S-E-C-O-L-L-I-N-G-S, because that's going to be where you're going to find out everything I'm doing, everything I write that's going to be posted. It's going to be linked on there. If there's any podcasts I'm going to be appearing on. I'm becoming a true new media person, Josh, where I'm writing much less and speaking on podcasts much more. I don't know if I like it, but I'm definitely becoming one of those people as opposed to a writing only person. But a lot of stuff, Voices of Wrestling recently. My most recent piece was about looking at cool down matches and kind of how WWE utilizes them on their pay-per-views, how AEW utilizes them on their pay-per-views, how New Japan doesn't use them at all. Kind of looking into the science behind that. That's on voicesofwrestling.com.
Yeah, podcasts are the new columns. You just talk and then you're done with writing. You have to go back to it, work on it. Yeah, it's especially if you care. Yeah, I mean, look, it's why so many columnists from back in the day are now hosting shows or doing their own podcasts, doing things like that, and they never write. Bill Simmons used to write tens of thousands of words, and then he doesn't write at all anymore. So
yeah, it happens.
Right, it happens. It happens.
You see a lot like a smaller scale, like Zach Lowe used to be writing like, you know, four or five articles a week, and now I think he does one, but that's because he's does way more podcasting and he does way more television work, and he's, you know, in part of the key part of the ESPN machine. I write articles for a living in my shoot job, so there's never a shortage of times I'm spent writing, but I find myself getting more interested in conversation as opposed to just pure, like, here's my opinion or here's my own perspective.
I hear you. All right, Jesse, well, good conversation here, and we will thanks again for stopping by Josh Nason's Punch Out. We'll talk to you after Hook wins the AEW Intermural title.
Absolutely. I'll be here I was banging the drum first.
That's right. Send Hook, send Jesse. Jesse, thanks so much. All right. Big thanks to Jesse Collings for stopping by, and thanks to all you guys for listening. I know you have a lot of choice in your podcast day, so I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our fine podcasters. Many of them now for free on WrestlingObserver.com. That's right. Majority of the shows are now absolutely free, so you can just click and listen. So that's a great stuff as well. And what's coming up this weekend? Big UFC show. I'm going to do after this month is up, I'm going to do kind of a mid-year UFC check-in and also kind of unpack some things about my struggles with kind of keeping interested in UFC and MMA as a whole. There's some things that I've been thinking about a lot over the past, over the past year. So I'm going to unpack some things about that. We'll do that at the midway point here. And next week, I'm working on an interview with someone I think is very... best way to say it's very overlooked, undervalued, underrated, even though he gets a lot of work a lot of places. So that'll make more sense next week, assuming everything comes through, and a couple other interviews hopefully coming down the pipe as well. So again, thanks to all you for listening. We'll talk to you next week, I hope. Until next time, this has been Josh Nason's Punch Out, and always insert catchphrase here.